From Westside Church in Bend, Oregon, you're listening to Behind the Message. Each week we take you behind what we teach here at Westside. I'm Ben Fleming.
I'm Evan Irwicker. That's my last name. I say it a lot. And we're here with Pastor Bo Stern live at the 945. It's great to
way better than the 8:15.
Yeah, the 8:15. They were great as well. So we're here for our annual discussion of some of our most memorable messages from the year behind us. And so we want to talk today about one of Pastor Bo's messages from our Radical Kinship series called Love Doesn't Want What It Doesn't Have, about envy. And before we begin into the conversation, we want to put up our text line. And this is going to be the number where you can text in during this conversation. Those will come to me and Ben, and we'll introduce your comments and questions into the conversation, especially if you are feeling a lot of envy right now. We want to hear from you. And so text in. But we just officially stepped into the Christmas season now that Thanksgiving's over. So I want to ask you guys, and this was not planned, so you may not have an answer, but what is one of the things that we do as part of our Christmas traditions that you think we should stop doing?
Wait, like it's Westside or is
no,
it
no,
myself?
No, well, maybe. Just in general, what American Christmas,
yeah.
What do we do that you
yeah.
say,
oh.
Why do we do this? There's no point. We
yeah.
should stop.
We've got to stop decorating yeah. the exterior of our houses. Why? Not because all of you aren't great at it, because people like me are pressured to do it, and I am going to die. I'm going to die out there. I don't belong on roofs. I don't belong on ladders. I don't belong on any of these things. You got to make it stop.
That's fair. Bo, anything?
Oh, I think maybe presents would be a good place to start. I know you're going to think I'm terrible.
Jeez, Bo.
It's a lot of work to do presents.
All right. Well,
I like Christmas.
A cynical
just,
start
just,
to this.
Just
service,
how it
yeah.
is. So
like Christmas,
you know. That question was a trap. Yeah. Yeah. How dare you, Grinch? You
not cool. Yeah. My answer to eggnog.
Eggnog. The movies. The music.
I know people don't like me.
That's your eggnog fans. Let's see your hands. Eggnog fans. Big fans.
I have many in my own home.
Eggnog rebels. You hate it. You just hate. It's just. It's too thick. It's okay. It's kind of a mixed crowd here. All right. So. All right, well, let's get into this message. Bo, this was out of the love passage, which is often quoted at weddings. And we tried to reframe that idea through this series of messages, that this is really Paul's exhortation to us to love a better way.
Yeah, do the way of Jesus inside of the way our relationships. How do we walk out the way of Jesus in that?
And I want to just read, I think this is out of the Message version. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love never gives up. Love cares more for others than for self. Love doesn't want what it doesn't have. And that's where we're going to camp out today for the next few minutes, is love doesn't want what it doesn't have. And talking about envy and how envy kind of seeps into our lives and potentially even the way that we love people, envy comes in. And the question I have is, what was it like before social media when we weren't faced with all these things that stir up envy in us?
When we thought our lives were good?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember when I thought it was good. Well, and actually this message, the reason it landed on this podcast today is because I couldn't have been more shocked with the feedback that I got afterwards. So many people wrote to me or stopped me in the hall to say that was really important for me. And I think I mentioned in the message when I was teaching it, I struggled as I was studying for it, thinking that Pastor Steve had gotten all the good parts of the love chapter. And I was like, I struggle with envy while I was doing my message on envy. So I thought that was kind of ironic. But yeah, I think it's just easy to look at other people's lives and think they're awesome. And that translation isn't very good. I am a fan of Peterson's translation, and we like to use it for this passage because he says it so well and bullet points it. But this particular line, love doesn't want what it doesn't have, isn't a great translation for the word envy, because love does often want what it doesn't have. You know, you fall in love with a girl, you want to buy her a ring, you love someone, you want to stay healthy for them. You want what you don't have sometimes, and that's okay. Envy is a different thing.
Hmm. How would you define envy then? What is at its core? What is the, what is that mechanism that, that yeah. comes alive?
Well, envy in this passage is the Greek word zelou, and it's an onomatopoetic word that, that sounds like a boiling pot, and it means that, to boil over. So that when envy is combined with anger, and I not only do I want what someone else has, I would take it from them if I could. It's causing, it's got a hold of me, then we're in bad shape. Because the line between envy and inspiration is kind of small. Like, I read lots of self-help books, lots of books about like building better habits, because I see someone's life and I like what they're doing and I want to do it too. So that's, you know, inspiration. But when I start to get angry and it starts to eat me up, Proverbs says envy rots the bones. And when that kind of emotion gets into my heart that I can't get rid of, that's coloring the way I see the world and especially the way that I love other people, then I'm in bad territory.
This probably has never been real more prevalent until we have had social media. And we bring up social media all the time. We were making a joke about it the other day in teaching team, that the next person that says the word Facebook in a message is going to get penalized somehow or something like that. Because we bring it up all the time, but it's because it's really relevant, especially when it comes to this subject. So can we make the determination, maybe I'll take whatever you say as gospel, Bo. Like, is this social media thing, is it good for us at all? Or is it, can we just say that it's bad? Or what do you think?
Well, I think as long as you're admiring the lights on other people's houses for Christmas, then you can also have social media. I think I'm fine with that. No, I don't think that. I think social media is like everything else. It's like food. It's like relationships. It's like movies. They can be good or bad, sure, or middle of the road. It's up to us to determine if that's going to serve us well or not. And I have to know, I mentioned in my message, I love like decorating Instagrams, but sometimes I have to be like, you're cut off. I'm going to unfollow that person because I can't just keep looking at that and feeling like, no, my house is dumb.
So how do I determine when I am inspired by somebody? You know, I grew up, I really wanted to be a professional athlete. And so I would watch the best players and I would imitate a lot of times their stances or their game or whatever as best as I could. What's the difference between being inspired by something and being envious of something? Because it sounds like there's a real kind of a tension in there.
I think part of it, there is a tension there, but I think part of it is, can you still wish for that person's good? Can you, because Paul's speaking about this right now exclusively with regard to how we love. So when envy gets in the middle of our heart, it impacts the way we love God and impacts the way we love each other, and it impacts the way we feel about ourselves. And so I think that if it's impacting the way you feel about yourself, you feel like, I'm so stupid, I haven't achieved that yet, why can't I be like that? If it impacts the way you feel about that other person, that's not okay. If it impacts the way you feel about God, why haven't you gifted me? Why haven't you blessed me? Then that's that kind of boiling pot inside your life, and you have to know when that starts and when it stops. And it would be great if we could cut off Facebook and be envy free, but clearly Cain and Abel weren't able to pull it off.
Yeah.
So I think we're in trouble no matter what.
And when we envy, is there a part of us, maybe as the poster of that picture, the one that puts it up, that enjoys knowing that people are going to be envious? No, you know, you want people to be like, I want that person's
life. That's probably
life.
A different sermon, but yeah.
That's just the evil in my own heart. Okay, all right.
It always comes back to the evil in Evan's heart. I don't know, every conversation.
All these conversations. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is that time, obviously, when you want to curate your life and not just on social media, but how we dress and how we look in the car we drive. I mean, that impacts all of our stuff. We always have to keep running our motives through the grid and through the metric of the gospel to say, are the things I possess and the way that I possess them driven and motivated by a desire to see Jesus change my world?
Right.
If they're not, then I'm in trouble. I'm not going to be as happy as I was created to be, I think.
And it's easy for, I think, inspiration to turn into envy. The closer someone is to you, or, you know, I can be inspired by someone I've never met, you know, a celebrity or a famous whatever that is in a category of career or whatever that I want. But if it's Ben's life and I feel like I deserve just as much as Ben, I may not deserve as much as Harrison Ford.
But
Ben and I, man, I deserve as much as him. So when he gets a better, hand dealt to him than I did, that stirs up more envy than maybe somebody I've never met or somebody who's just out there. And so why I bring that up, that's dangerous in a community or in a family, because the people you're supposed to love the most and closest to you are many times, I think, the ones that stir up the most envy and feelings. That boiling feeling is what's, the person sitting around the table at Thanksgiving.
And I've noticed that I'm doing it right and healthy when I see the perspective differently. I see my friends and my family as people that are on my team, so to speak. And so when they have success, that can translate essentially into my success, because you are with me. We are together. We are a tribe or a family or whatever. And I've noticed that I will take other people's successes in a lot healthier way when I think of it that way. Now it's my opportunity to celebrate with you, to encourage you, because we are in this together, as opposed to if I just get what I want and then I can be at a certain level and then I can look down at everybody else.
Right.
Yeah, I think we're really an interesting species, because we do pretty well with people who need us, like blessing people who are not where we're at. And we do okay oftentimes with people we perceive to be way above us. But sometimes it's that middle level of relating to peers that's really hard. It's hard to look at my life next. Because, I mean, what's the hardest thing in the world to do? Go to your dumb class reunion. Why is that so hard? Because those are the people, those are your peers. Those are your pure peers, and you want to have done well, and you want to have stayed the same size as you were in high school or whatever. And so those are the ones that I care more about, even though I was the sole member of my graduating class. So every year I am most likely to succeed. I'm doing the best. I'm at the top.
Doesn't that mean you're also the...
Hey.
Never mind. No, it's not important.
We're getting lots of questions in, and they're all in regards to your camera angle with this mic.
Oh, there
so
we go.
We're gonna, about that.
There. Is that
here
better?
I am.
We heard you. We heard you loud and clear.
Just like some all right. Little voice from behind the microphone.
Okay, so I want to read this quote by Charlie Reese that you quoted in your message. It says, "It is never wise to seek or wish for another's misfortune. If malice or envy were tangible and had a shape, it would be the shape of a boomerang."
Yeah, comes right back at you. It is. It's like you feel yourself just being mad at someone or that feeling of why do they have so much or why have they achieved that or why is their marriage happy or why, But really, envy always it feels gross. I mean, doesn't it? Nobody likes that feeling. It's just a gross feeling that, and it makes you feel like you're less than. And it just, I think it never works. Pride might feel a little good, but envy, I don't think, ever gets to feel good.
And when you brought up, when you were walking through sorrow and the temptation to let envy also pile on, and how both are a weight. So you have the weight of sorrow, and then if you allow envy in, because my life is going so badly or someone else has it better, that adds a secondary weight that isn't necessary onto the whole situation.
It does, yeah. I realized that my weight was really heavy when my husband was dying, and we would come here to Christmas Eve services, and I would see all the healthy families around me, and I would just think, oh man, my life is so much harder than theirs, or my life used. I would envy even my 5 years ago, Bo, instead of like what my life used to be, and it was just really hard. And then I realized if I carry the weight of envy, that's going to be just, it'll sink me. It would sink me. I couldn't afford it.
So tacking onto that, somebody asked a question, listing a lot of the things that you just did, the holiday times, looking at other people's Instagrams, greeting cards, everything, family, grandkids, basically finished off with a question. So I ache at this time of year. What do I do with that ache?
Yeah, we talked about what to do during this message. And one of the things is acknowledge that it's okay to know that you were made to crave. We're all made, wired up with the desire for something, but the something is ultimately God, the presence of God in our life. And if we can take our cravings there first, it does help some of the other things. And be careful that you've delineated, is there sorrow in your life or envy? Sorrow is not sin. Sorrow, Paul says nothing about you got to keep sorrow out of your life. That'll ruin your relationships. So when I say, am I grieving the loss of my husband or am I envying other lives? That's a kind of a tricky line, but I want to make sure I hold myself to it. I want to say, no, I don't want to let envy in. And the way the Bible instructs us to deal with that is to rejoice with those who rejoice. And so I'm going to always try to pour on gratitude for other people's healthy, good relationships.
And something that you alluded to earlier, especially when it comes to social media or anything else that would create this feeling of envy in your life or this time of year or anything. I remember one time when cell phones were first becoming a thing, we had called my dad a lot and he didn't answer. And then we talked to him later and we said, why didn't you pick up the phone? We called you 8 times. And he said, look at me. This phone is for me. I tell it what to do. It doesn't tell me what to do. And I was like, well, it makes perfect sense. And so I've tried to, as best I can, I need to be better at social media, really, because I do believe that it's a connection opportunity and some cool opportunities for creativity. The social media is for me. And if the fruit of my life that comes from social media is a negative, or it's having an impact on my family that I don't like, or it's having an impact on my own mental health, it's for me. I'm going to delete it. I'm going to get rid of it. I don't have to have it. You don't have to have even a smartphone if you don't want to. You can go back. I've seen people with flip phones. They exist. You guys are out there, right? And we don't have to have. I got applause for that. Did you hear that?
I heard it. Yeah.
And we're reaching new demographics of people. But it's for you. And if you find these things are just creating this angst or this envy of your life, you can't necessarily just throw away. You can't necessarily just throw away family that's making you feel this. I understand that, especially around the dinner table. But there are things that you can remove from your life. Improving your life is not always about learning how to properly walk around the couch that you keep stubbing your toe on in the living room. Sometimes you need to move the couch, not necessarily move your own walking path. And so if that's a thing for you, that's a problem, then you can address it in that way as well.
Here's a comment. It says, I have coworkers who aren't Christ followers, excelling in their career and doing great, and I have the Almighty God on my side, yet I seem to be floundering in mine. So what advice can you give?
Oh, is King David here? Because that's what he said too. Right? He said, why do the wicked flourish while I am on the run for my life? I mean, that is the cry of many, many good people. Not just good Christ followers, good people. Why do bad things happen to good people is one thing, but why do good things happen to bad people? That's a question I'ma ask Jesus. I think it's strong as well. I agree with you. It is hard. It just is. But you have to know God is working all these things together in your life. And he can use humility in your life easily as much and as well as he can use prosperity and success. Right. Far more people are shipwrecked by success than they are by failure. So we always like to put it through the metric of our society, but the Bible almost never chooses to do it that way. The first will be last and last will be first, and the foolish confound the wise. And our metric doesn't often work. But God is still good and faithful and true and with you in the hard times and the good times. And
yeah, for you guys, where has most personal growth come? The difficult times or the good times when everything was going well? I mean, it's almost rhetorical.
I'll let you know when everything goes well. We'll see.
I read an article on the number of lottery winners that end up getting killed because of the money for different reasons. And it's just interesting to think what we assume success is going to look like and the effect it would have on our lives if we only, and fill in the blank. But maybe there's somebody that knows more than we do at this current time directing our steps, you know?
Yeah, I remember when I was raising my daughters, I would always tell them regularly, and this isn't going to sound very nice, but I would tell them often, there will always be a prettier girl. There's just going to always be a prettier girl out there. You decide right now what you believe about yourself. And you decide right now what you believe about what God believes about you. Because if you spend your whole life determining your worth based on how people around you look or act or what they achieve, you are going to be always striving for something you can't get. And so I just think it's important to fill ourselves up with the love and acceptance of a good, good father. And then that carries us through a lot of drought, hard times. And good times are great, but they're short.
And we need to invest some time maybe being countercultural in all that. Like, I have a 1-year-old daughter and I found myself a lot, and it's not a bad thing. I've just decided to add to it. But a lot of times I'll grab her and say, oh my gosh, you're so beautiful. You're just so pretty. You're just so whatever. I'm like, you know, I could expand this a little bit. You're so strong. You're so, you know, what are some other things that I can add into this so that we are actually creating people, especially in our young people, people that have different metrics, that it's not just what everybody else has always said all the time, that my value is based on my beauty or even just my strength, but maybe there's something else, there's something more because that's been poured into me my whole life.
Yeah.
So you also talk about One of your points for helping rectify this problem of envy is remember that we were made for this. I found in my life a lot of times just remembering what God has done is of incredible value. What are some ways that you remember that you were made for this?
Made to crave. One way I do it is by starting every day by filling that void first. First, get with Jesus and recontextualize, realign myself before the day starts, before all the stuff starts racing in. I do find that if I open my laptop and if I start to kind of be out there among the news of the day and the social media of the day and all of that stuff, I right away am feeling jostled by things. But if I start with the unchanging truth of the Word of God and who He says I am, it really helps me remember I'm made to crave Him and I have Him. I'm made to crave Him, and He's made to give unlimited amounts of Himself to us. And I think so many of us just take so little of His presence and then wonder why we just keep striving and looking for it, something, the unknown, unreachable star that we can't quite get to. And so to me, that's one good way, is to just start by saying first, even if it's 2 minutes, first, I want You and I have You and I plant myself in Your truth today. I think it really helps.
Yeah.
With the rest of it.
And I enjoy reading the news a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of a go-to, pass the time, to the point where I realize it's probably not healthy every hour to be checking news. So I've gone on screen time.
Really?
It's an amazing thing on iPhones now, but restricting the news sites, and I find myself finding new ones, being like, oh, I didn't block that one. I can go to Yahoo News, you know, and no, Evan, you know, you stay on track as far as the health of your mind by not just ingesting this steady stream of just all this external stuff that can stir up those feelings.
Yes, and one thing I mentioned in this message is that not only do you need to know you were made to crave, your world knows you were made to crave, and they work on it all the time, especially during this season. Every commercial, everything tells you you aren't enough, you don't have enough yet, you need something more. And just because they tell you that doesn't mean you have to buy it. You can be in and of yourself with your God enough. And but we live in a culture that knows this is how we pay the bills, is by selling people stuff they don't need to make them think they're something they aren't.
And a lot of it is just educating yourself on that. I remember the first marketing course I took, the teacher alerted me to the fact that different places, cereal sellers and distributors and stuff, buy which shelf a lot of times. You can pay to have the ones right at eye line so that you can charge a little bit more and then you can have some more popularity. That's why a lot of the, you know, the Western Family brands are down on the bottom and you got to dig through them if you want the big bag or whatever. You know, for me, and discovering this with my kids too, they put the Paw Patrol displays everywhere. I mean, they're in Men's Fitness, they're in the groceries, they're, if you work at Target, help me out, all right? Because I am losing money on this deal. But sometimes it's just having an understanding of what you're talking about. This is how the world wants to attack you. This is how envy wants to attack you. This is where it lives. And so maybe, you know, if we can't just not go in those directions with our lives, again, deleting something or not allowing it into your life, at least you can have an understanding, okay, I know the strategy of my enemy. I know what they're after, and that can create some good mental health as well. We got a lot of incredible questions right now. We're going to try to get to as many of them as we can. This one says, how do we foster the culture of we-ness and we for shared success rather than holding up success of the individual? The completion of our culture, the competition that our culture celebrates, it's a lot to push back against. How do we foster that culture of we as best we can?
Yeah, one thing we talked about in this message was being somebody who cheers from the cheap seats. And when you see other people's lives, you know, you're mostly, you maybe have 6 or 8 people in your life for whom you can speak into their life and you can have real impact on their life. And they will welcome your, you know, voice in their life. But for the rest of the crowd, you're in the cheap seats. And if we start to just give ourselves permission to really yell approval from the cheap seats. I am cheering for you. I believe in you. I believe in God in you. I believe that even if you're making a mistake, he's gonna help you turn that into something good. I believe in his ability to love you in failure. I believe, but we withhold so much. We withhold so much of our approval from people because we think a sign of my approval will mean that you should go ahead with that and you're probably making a big mistake. And I just think if we get good at verbalizing our acceptance of one another, it's a really beautiful thing. I love people like that who I just know are going to just be encouraging. Spencer Schauber is one of those guys, just stops in my office and talks to me about a message or whatever. And he's just always 100% encouraging. And I appreciate it so much.
I agree to disagree on that, but I'm just kidding.
He comes to my office and talks about fantasy football all the time. And it's not encouraging.
Bo, you, in reference to that, you were talking about how online, how difficult it can be even just to click like or that thumbs up or that heart on somebody's post because it feels like they don't deserve that from me.
Giving something to them. Mine was like, it's literally the least we can do. Yeah, like clicking like, and yet still sometimes I just don't want to.
Yeah.
I just want to withhold my Facebook like. Yeah. How dumb. So dumb.
The quote you said in the message is, it said, every time you give approval, you give an offering to Jesus that doesn't cost you financially, but is wildly generous.
Wildly generous. When we're able to just say, I bless someone. I bless the competition. I pray that they win and succeed and that God uses all the things in their life. Why did Jesus say, love your enemies and bless those who persecute you? Is it because they need it? I don't really think so. I think he said it because you need it, because that frees your life up to be this flourishing, good life. And this is another thing I used to tell my kids because they, you know, junior high, ugh, so competitive and icky, especially among junior high girls. And I just be like, you guys just throw the game, let them win. You're going to be so much happier if you just say, just let them win and you just be you and be happy being you.
We had a question asking, where do we get the scripture for the idea that we are made to crave? And you said it a few things in here. I'll read Psalm 42:1, as the deer pants for the streams of water, so my soul longs for you, my God, my soul thirsts for God, the living God. Where can I go and meet with God? And then in James 4, what is the source of wars and fights among you? Don't they come from the cravings that are at war within you? You desire what you do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in war you do not have because you do not ask. So there's a little citation for all that. And
I love that Psalms 42. Is that David or is that Sons of Korah or somebody else in Psalms 42? Do you remember? Is it David?
Yeah, I think it's David.
I just love that same cry that we talked about earlier, why do the wicked flourish?
Mm-hmm.
This is from the same guy saying, as the deer pants for streams of water, my soul pants for you. Maybe we could just put those two Psalms together and say, when you feel that sense of why is my enemy, Mike Alexander, flourishing? Sorry, Mike, you're just right in front of me. And not me. And then you go right to Psalms 42, but as the deer pants for streams of living water, so my soul crave, you know, and pair those two sentiments. Maybe that's a prescription for envy. I don't know.
Another question says, in our culture, especially in conversations regarding race and racial tension, how do we tell the difference between people who are stirring up or leveraging envy and those who are honestly trying to come to the defense of those who are oppressed?
I think that's a really good question. I don't know that I have the answer to it.
Evan, do you have the answer to that?
I don't, but I appreciate the last few times, Bo, that we've had these panel discussions on stage, your willingness just to say, I don't know the answer, which is a great statement, except if you're trying to moderate a discussion on a stage in front of people.
Notice how I just batted it that way. I was going to go this way after that if you didn't have an answer.
I think we're going to move it to the front row now. See who has the answer to that question? I don't know. And I used to make stuff up. But now I don't.
In your 30s, you make stuff up still.
Well,
but in your mid-40s,
thank you.
You don't.
Oh,
yeah, there we go. Oh, I know.
I could take a shot at making stuff up if you want.
No, really,
for me, the broad idea, and this works for so many things, is always to, again, just look at the fruit of those people. You can tell, especially if you give it time, especially social media warriors or people that are out there kind of banging this or that drum. Obviously, the drums aren't necessarily always the bad thing, but the motivations can be. I just feel like those things always come into the light. when people are improperly motivated as far as any kind of movement or judgment or just anything like that. God will bring all those things out in the light so that we have a real understanding. You know, if there's real fruit, if you think somebody's doing something, you know, I have a hard time. People talk about Lance Armstrong all the time in the sports community. Well, he was a doper and he did all this. And I'm like, well, yeah, he cheated and his brand also made millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars for cancer research. And so, you know, there's some things that happen even with people that are improperly motivated that God 100% uses for good in the end.
And there are going to be people who are motivated by things that I am not. And that does not make them, like, their motives wrong or their, God, I think, places passion in each of us toward a certain area. And just because somebody else doesn't share that doesn't make them a bad person.
Yeah. This comment says, it is a short distance from feeling deserving. Is it a short distance from feeling deserving to being envious?
Yeah, wow, that's a good question. That's a good statement, actually. Yeah. Do it the way you did it.
It is, yeah. But that feeling deserving, is there a place for that? Is that okay? Can I feel like, hey, I earned this. I should have this nice thing in my life.
I think it depends what it is. Because I just think we just are saturated by our American culture. And we live in a time in history that is outrageously abundant and opulent, and it doesn't ever feel like it, but it just is. And so do I deserve running water? Yeah, in America, you kind of have a right to that, but most of the third world, you don't. So, I mean, I don't know. We're blessed to not live in the persecuted church, and we have the right to come here and worship in freedom and safety. We may not always. And so then do we say, no, I deserve that? No, I think I deserve the presence of God in my life. And I think if it's all just boils down, that's what I get to say, I get this. And, you know, draw boundaries in your life and try to achieve and have good habits and discipline and all of that stuff. But I just get worried when we set something up that's, this is God's got me on this great career path. Mm-hmm. That to me is a quick trip to feeling.
And maybe that sense of knowing what you deserve, when Paul talks about the secret of contentment in his life, he says the good and the bad, that he's content in the good moments as well as the bad. So maybe our contentment shouldn't be tied to what we get or what is happening in our lives. I think Paul would say it has to be rooted in something deeper and better.
Yeah. Well, and I think we can ask the why God questions. I don't think they bug God. But I think as long as you ask the, you know, why God, why is this happening to me? But you also ask, why are my kids healthy? I don't deserve that. And why is America so wonderful? And why is the clean air? And why running water? And why, as long as we understand that we really are ridiculously blessed, then I think it's okay to ask the questions. It's always okay to ask the questions, but I think it's not always healthy for us to get into this thing of like, somebody has something, I should have it too.
Yeah. We have time for one more question. Sorry about the questions that we can't respond to. There's so much interaction, which is incredible. Thank you so much, you guys. This one is real basic. Is envy maybe due to the desire to be part of a group and to feel belonging?
Yeah. And that's also a good desire. At the root of it, I think that's a good desire. I think the Bible emphasizes it, that, you know, God looks at this incredible creation and says there's only one thing that isn't good, and it's that Adam doesn't belong to someone. And so I think the desire to belong is good, but again, it all comes down to when you start to let the pot boil, when at a place where you start to say, okay, I need to make relationships. That's a good goal. That's something that I want to make happen in my life, and I want to reach out to people, and I want to love people well. But when it starts to become something that's agitating, and when it's starting to make you feel like it's never going to work, and everyone's in, and I'm out, and I don't belong, then I think that's a problem, and that can't usually produce good fruit.
So what are some ideas for people? I mean, there's probably people here that are brand new today. This is your first service or something like that. One of the reasons that we come to church in the first place is we want to feel some belonging. Mm-hmm. What is a strategy maybe for people that don't, I don't know, maybe an easy way to put it is I just don't make friends easily. What's a good strategy for someone coming into a new environment? Maybe it's not at church, maybe it's at work or whatever, to create a sense of belonging for yourself, right? Because sometimes we feel like it has to happen to us.
Right.
They all include me and then I'm finally in. What are some good strategies or thoughts for that?
Well, I think one strategy, and it's not going to sound like a strategy, but But I think that sometimes I read things that Christians should be the most friendly and most loving and most aggressively accepting people ever. And I just think people in general, whether they know God or not, are kind of awkward. And so when you come into a setting like this, don't expect Evan to know how to reach out to you. Don't expect that it's not necessarily because of some weird spiritual belief system that people aren't automatically friendly. Some of them are shy. Some of them don't have social intuition. Yeah. This is a group full of like tons of history and so many stories. And you come in thinking everyone's got it together and they just aren't reaching out to me. Mm-hmm. But we're all wounded and broken and we've all got some, I mean, we've all got a little weirdness, right?
Right.
We all just do. So come in knowing that.
Sorry.
Come in knowing that first. Like, lots of people are just as insecure as me. It's not that everyone fits and I'm the one who doesn't. Just come in saying, okay, we're all weird. I'm going to be the friendly weird one.
Yeah, and just because you haven't made best friends with the group of people that you thought you would become best friends with, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you don't belong, that you don't have somebody. Like, I don't know if about you, have you ever tried to infiltrate a group of people that you're like, this is a cool group of people, they're going to be my friends, and they're just not. And you find yourself on the outside looking in, and you're like, man, this was my one shot. Right. I was going to be on the team. Right. And did you say no? You're such a, this was right. it. And I see it so often. Maybe it comes from being with young adults. You know, they go, well, I'm just not accepted by the group. I'm like, well, no, you're not accepted by these five people. Maybe,
right.
Maybe you're not at their house all the time. Man, there's a group of people that you can create. You know, there's another group of people that love you. And it's sometimes we get obsessed with exactly what it's going to look like. It doesn't turn out that way. Then we feel like we don't belong.
And I remember when I was doing student ministries, you know, the conversation always comes up. It's so clicky. There's this click and this click. And my response wasn't
always,
oh, we're going to dissolve all the clicks and everyone's going to be in one massive friend circle of 120 people. Right. Instead, I always want to say, like, well, let's make sure there's a click for everybody. Let's make 17 different clicks in this group so that, and you have a place. It isn't just this one group of people or that group of people. Like, let's have community of all types and maybe shifting our expectations of, I have to be with him because he's so cool.
Right.
Well, there's other people too that are looking for community and relationship.
And that exists everywhere, by the way. Every youth group I've been a part of, every church group I've ever led, I've had the click conversation with somebody that feels like it's all just too clicky. I think people are friends. Mm-hmm. And yeah, people shouldn't be clicky and move people out or whatever. But people are friends. They're going to gravitate toward people like-mindedness or whatever, people that have schedules that are near theirs. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you have to want what you don't have. That means you have an opportunity to create something that doesn't exist already.
So as we close today, what are ways that we can lean into the good side of this conversation, the fact that we were made to crave, the fact that we were made for a relationship and community, the fact that, wanting a nice place for our children to grow up in isn't a bad thought mm-hmm. or feeling. How can we lean into the good side of this and not into the shadow land of envy and jealousy?
Yeah. Well, one just really basic thing, and you may want to throw something at me for saying it, because I know we've heard it so much this time of year, but just become obsessed with gratitude. Just become obsessed with it. Like, I am so thankful for what I have in my life and for what I've been through and for what I'm not going through right now. And for, you know, just so many things. We're abundantly blessed. And that really helps me ward off some of the things where I tend to get off and say, I'm not achieving yet, or I'm not there yet, or I haven't figured it out yet, or, you know, and everyone else has, and everyone else is, you know, doing better. And so, and like for single people during this season, this, especially the first year after my husband died and while he was sick, that was really hard to be with all married people at gatherings. And so sometimes I would say yes, and sometimes I would say no, but still just married people welcome single people in, and single people be willing to hang out and be together. And it, you know, you don't have to do it all the time, but do it some. When we start to isolate, that gets bad. And so any way that we can fight that as a culture at Westside, watching out for people and not letting them get stuck or isolated or feel alone, where the enemy has room to step in and make them believe things that are not true about their lives, that's really cool.
And that's a great example, because that your singleness happened to you. Mm-hmm. It's not a choice that you made, or it. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you wanted to come into your life. It's something that happened to you. Does kind of shame come along with the envy in some of those situations?
Sure, yeah. And I don't know almost any single people that it happened to them. I mean, it didn't happen to them. Everyone, no matter how we ended up here, is living in a world that kind of idolizes couplehood, and it gets hard. And you can just compare your circumstances easily. And for me, it's when people whose sons have fathers, father-daughter dances, those are hard for me. And I have to say, no, I've got to rejoice with them and know that God is working in my life in this. And I do that really imperfectly. So just because I have the mic, I suck at this.
On that note,
that I preach to you.
It's a good final word. especially
happy holidays.
Yeah, right. I guess
it's
Merry
Christmas, Bo. Thank you.
Anyway, we're going to end it there. We have two more discussions today, and these will all be posted on our website, behindthemessage.org. Anyway, thank you guys so much for being here today.